As a type 1 diabetic who just completed his first Ironman 70.3 race, which is 70.3 miles long, and stayed 96% time in range for the entirety of the 7+ hour race, I want to share a few strategies that I used, not just that are useful for competing in an Ironman race, or half Ironman in this case, but also how to stay in range for day-to-day activities, big moments, or critical areas of life, like important meetings, travel, family dinners, and actually enjoying your life with type 1 diabetes that I think might be helpful for you. If you stick around to the end, I want to give you the exact framework that I've used with a few of my clients to help them to get closer to automating their blood sugars. And I hope you find it helpful today as well. If you don't know who I am, my name is Matt Vandevecht. I'm a certified master fitness trainer and nutritionist. I live with type 1 diabetes and currently I enjoy endurance racing activities as well. This is a new thing for me, and I hope you pick up some useful tips and tricks for your diabetes today.
I've spent the last 10 years pushing the limits while identifying trends and patterns in my type 1 diabetes management. Follow along as I learn, apply, and share the fitness, nutrition, and lifestyle strategies that I've learned from diabetes experts around the world. The real question is, how can we live fearlessly with diabetes while maintaining stable blood sugars? This podcast is here to give you the answer. My name is Matt Vandevecht, head coach and co-founder of FTF Warrior, and welcome to Part of My Pancreas.
So as I mentioned in the intro, I'm on cloud nine right now because I did just finish my first ever half Ironman, which is 70.3 miles. You do a 1.2 mile swim, followed by a 56 mile bike ride, followed by a half marathon or 13.1 mile running. This was a couple days ago. And at that point on that day, I had never run a half marathon in my life. So that was the longest distance I had ever done. And it was on the back end of biking and swimming. It was insane. But I picked up a few strategies along the way with my training for this that I believe will apply to a lot more than just race day activities, but also the day-to-day exercises and activities and foods and all that with type 1, as it's quite difficult to navigate a day with blood sugars and all that. So one of the strategies that I used was having plan A, plan B, plan C. Now, in this race, a number of things went wrong for me, and I'm going to do a full race breakdown in a separate video on my personal YouTube channel. So we'll link that one up later when I've actually got it up there and go through the details of it. But for today, I want to stick to mostly just blood sugar topics. Now, I did stay 96% time in range the entire race. The out-of-range blood sugars that I saw were in the very beginning after the swim. This has been notorious for me, a difficult section. This is typically the only spot that I fall out of range when I do triathlons, and it's because I am disconnected from my pump for a significant amount of time. I end up going a little bit high, and then as I exit the swim, get my pump reconnected, and hop back on a bike, it tends to come back down. And in this race specifically, I had plan A, plan B, plan C for what do I do in each scenario. Now, I expected it to go a little bit higher. So what I did was run a very specific calculation on my insulin pump for a temporary basal rate. So a basal rate increase that allowed me to come back down a bit faster. And I was very cautious about this because for me, insulin plus activity is usually disastrous. And so I wanted to make sure I didn't cause any disasters just getting into the bike ride, since I'd be on the bike for about 4 hours. And actually did better than I expected. It's only on the bike for 3 hours and 30 minutes, which means I was faster than I expected, which is great because your booty gets pretty sore after sitting on a bike for that long. But this temporary target enabled me to come back into range without, not temporary target, temporary basal rate. So I do everything manual mode. I don't use the algorithms for this because, quite frankly, the algorithms have screwed me over a few times during intense endurance activity like this because they're just not programmed for that. They're programmed for the average person, right? So with that in mind, I use what are called blood sugar formulas. I find they're much more precise, more predictable, more steady. And once I was able to get back into range using that blood sugar formula, I was able to maintain a nice steady line. And I'll show you right now on the screen. This is my graph. For the entirety of the race, as you can see, it did start a little bit higher from the swim section where it went up and came right back down and then cruised right in that sweet spot for the rest of the race. So very happy about that. I'll show another picture on screen. I did end up consuming 370 grams of fast-acting and slow-acting carbohydrates throughout the entirety of the race. I started before the race with some snacks to get my blood sugars where I wanted them before the swim so that I don't go low and drown in the water, because that's important, right? Coming out of the water, I know exactly how much fuel I need to offset the temporary basal rate that I introduced, because you need fuel once you get past about 90 to 120 minutes of endurance activity. Even non-diabetics need to refuel. You burn all of your stores. And so I needed to find a way not only to not go low, not go high, but also to introduce just enough insulin to allow me to eat constantly while I'm biking, while I'm running. So the picture I'll put on the screen is, I believe, actually the 370 carbs that I did consume. So it was an enormous amount. It was four dates, one RX bar, followed by another RX bar, followed by five, I think, maybe six, but five at least, goos, which are a fast-acting energy gel for endurance runners. And I also had four, technically six, double serving packets of Tailwind, which is pure dextrose. And I ended up not drinking all of it. I watched my blood sugars very carefully, and I have pre-calculated amounts that I use. But the plan ABC that I was referring to, that I believe will help you as well in your experiences with diabetes, is that diabetes, it changes day to day as the situation changes. And one thing that I love to live by and recommend for my clients is that as a situation changes, so must our strategy, right? So if my blood sugars were not high coming out of the swim, well, then I would probably not want to increase my temporary basal rates on my insulin pump, right? Or alternatively, and this has happened before in training, if I come out of the water and my blood sugars skyrocket because maybe the water's too cold, or I'm stressed out, or I was disconnected longer than I intended, right? In a previous episode even, I experienced hypothermia, a hypothermic shock, where I was shaking violently for 30 minutes because the water was so cold. That shot my blood sugars to about 250, and I got stuck there. So you gotta have plan A, B, C, D, E in some cases, right, for all the different situations we might encounter with blood sugars. So if I go into a restaurant, for example, I look at the menu, I gotta have plan A, B, C, right? I gotta know if they have the option that I want to eat, and in some cases they're out of that food, which is such a bummer, right? But if that happens, I gotta know what my next best option is going to be, not only for my taste buds, but also for my blood sugars. So going into a restaurant, maybe we'll do a separate episode on this if this is a topic you guys want me to hit, but there's a very specific strategy for how I order my food, when I order my food, what the dosing strategy is. Do I pre-bolus? Do I not? Do you wait until the food gets to you? Do you dose afterwards and hope for the best, right? There's gotta be an adaptive method with your blood sugars. Now, going into the bike section of this race, blood sugars were back in range. I was feeling great about it, and I'm rather confident on the bike, so I wasn't too worried about that. But what I was worried about is heading into the run, where I've never run more than 10 miles in my entire life, and I've only done that once, and it was like 3 weeks ago. And on top of that, I've never done it with a 9-pound backpack on, which is what I carry with me. It's got my glucometer, it's got glucagon, it's got extra sugar, it's got my ID, my diabetic alert tag, like all the essentials, right? So I'm covered no matter what. Now, looking back, I've never done a race like this before. I didn't realize that literally every single mile, there's snack tables galore. Like, there's probably a couple thousand carbs every mile that you have access to. So now that I know that, I might not run with a backpack next time, because it kind of jacked up my body. I'm certainly dealing with some injuries right now in the back end of that. I've got what's probably a stress fracture in my foot. Again, my knees messed up, my hips messed up, and just a couple pieces that I know would have been lessened if I didn't have 9 pounds bouncing on my back the entirety of the race. But what I wanted to make sure my blood sugars were ready for is the lows or the highs. It could go either way, depending on what you experience. And during the run, right after I ran into another diabetic, which was so cool. I actually ran into a diabetic in line when we're getting ready for the swim section as well. Actually, he ran to me. He was like, hey, he saw me fiddling with my insulin pump. He's like, are you diabetic? I was like, yeah, man. And then on the run, I saw somebody's CGM. And I said, hey, diabetic? And then this woman goes, well, type 1. And I was like, me too. Like, let go us, you know. Super cool. Found out after the race that they were actually on the same team. They did a relay where one person does the swim, then they tag, next person does the bike, and then tag, next person does the run. So it's three of them for the same course. So cool, because they're all type 1. And it was really awesome to see other type 1s getting it. So anyways, on the run section, that's where my plan required that I adapt, because I got to a place where I was full. I had had, at that point, 320 grams of carbs. And I thought, you know what? I don't want any more. I'm feeling like this might be my max. I'm getting a little bit nauseous because I'm eating so much. I'm good. And it was exciting that I got to that point. I've had some practice runs before where I got zero carbs because blood sugars were higher, and that's not good either. We need fast-acting carbs during endurance training. Your body requires it of you, otherwise you fall to pieces. And so I was really excited that I got my nutrition in. I was able to consume that many carbs, but I got to a point where I kind of hit a wall with my digestion. I said, you know what? I really don't want to eat anymore. So I set another temp basal rate. Was very careful about it. You know, you don't want to completely remove insulin for hours on end, because that can lead to its own set of issues. And I find that all or nothing strategies are not always the best. And so I look at setting more of a precision level between how much insulin do I need? How much insulin do I want? Is there a crossover between those where I can still sip on sugar and get some fuel in, but not have to drink, you know, a whole bottle of dextrose every 20 minutes? Cool, let's find that. And that certainly allowed me to find the sweet spot where I wasn't focused on blood sugars anymore. I was more focused on my running form, able to focus on how I was going to complete the race. I knew I was going to finish it, but I didn't know if it was going to be pretty or not. And it was in between because I was certainly injured. I had to stop and walk multiple times. My legs nearly collapsed out from under me a few times, and it was incredibly painful. And at this point now, a couple days out from the race, or after the race, I walk with a limp right now. It's pretty bad. But blood sugars were not part of the issue. Now, when we consider, I told you I'd tell you this if you stuck around towards the end, when we consider plans A, B, C, D, E, F, G, all the way to Z, all the different plans we need to have with diabetes, my favorite framework that I teach a lot of my clients, especially the parents with type 1 kids, is if, then, unless. So the framework goes like this. If blood sugars are doing this, then I do that. Unless this is happening. Right? Prime example of this for these parents with kids that have type 1 that I coach would be giving this to their nurse at school, right? So the nurse is more empowered to make decisions for the parents if the parents aren't responding to texts or whatever. And you give them a sheet of paper that says, if blood sugars are above 250, give X amount units of insulin unless they're about to go to recess, right? Because we know exercise brings most of our blood sugars down. So in this case, if the parents do know that blood sugars are going to come down with exercise, we wouldn't want to introduce an enormous amount of insulin before going to exercise, because insulin plus exercise for most people, especially me, leads to blood sugars that plummet like quick. So you have to be really careful with that, because blood sugars can become volatile in an instant if we mess up the calculations, right? Another example could be if blood sugars are over 200, then give X amount units of insulin to correct, unless there's already 2 units of insulin on board, right? So these unless statements allow us to have more of an adaptive method with our diabetes management style. And unfortunately, a lot of the endocrinologists, doctors, dietitians, PAs, diabetes educators, they give you the if-then statements, and that's it. In fact, this is something I put in my book recently, because this is the big distinction between the two. The if-then from our doctor's offices are often, if blood sugars are high, take insulin. And that's it. Which, it does help, to have that guidance, but it does not give you the whole picture, right? And the whole picture is the context that is missing. So if I am using the same diabetes management strategies on race day when I'm doing a half Ironman that I would a normal day when I'm not that active, I would have run into nightmare situations, right? If I was aiming for my target blood glucose rate of, let's say 90 to 110, like I typically do, like right now, 115. Oh, we're so close. I was at 110 right before this this recording. But if I'm aiming for 90 to 110 before I go swim 1.2 miles, which by the way, I have no way of knowing what my blood sugars are doing while I'm swimming because the water impedes the connection of Bluetooth. So even if I brought my phone with me, it wouldn't be connected to my CGM. So big obstacle there for me to overcome. No connection. I don't know what my blood sugars are doing. So I really have to trust my formulas, right? My blood sugar formulas. But if I'm aiming for 90 to 110, as I would on a normal day when I'm heading out into the ocean, that would be a recipe for disaster. Now, the issue is that doctors don't give you this context shift. They don't tell you, oh, if things change, so must your strategy. They say, oh, you should always pre-bolus 10 to 15 minutes. Well, but what if I'm low, right? So if you're about to eat, take your insulin 15 minutes early. That's their whole statement. And then we run into these situations where I'm currently 60 and going down with insulin on board. And I'm thinking, okay, my doctor, I'm trying to think if I'd be low in that case, right? So fuzzy thoughts. Oh man, my doctor told me if it's, what's the timing again? I don't know, 15 minutes. That's what it was. I have to wait 15 minutes for my insulin to start working before I can take my first bite. And by the time you get to your first bite, you're at 40 and it's going faster now because you added insulin, right? So we need this unless statement, the context of our diabetes dosing decisions. That's the saving grace for allowing you to go out with family and friends and have a massive dinner where it's a lot different than it would be in your standard mealtime at home. This is what allows us to go compete in an Ironman 70.3 and stay 96% time in range the entire race, right? This is what allows us to live our lives with the best possible chance of avoiding complications, is understanding that our diabetes dosing decisions, triple D, all right, they change as the situations change. So because I was racing, I wasn't aiming for 90 to 110. And because I'm starting off in the ocean where I don't have access to my blood sugars, didn't have my glucagon because I'm just wearing a wetsuit, right? I have sugar tucked in my wetsuit, but not a lot because the wetsuits are really tight to make you faster in the water. I have to have my strategy shift so my target blood glucose was above 150. By the time I got in the water, I got it at 146 is where I clocked it in. So right before I hopped in the water, took a couple bites of the RX bar that I had, and that got me up to, I think, 180 or something like that mid-swim, because after you reconnect to your CGM, it shows you the missing data. And then from 180, it crept up to 196, and then my temp rate and the bike ride took it back down to about 130, I think, is where it balanced out. So it's a whole math thing. Like diabetes, summed up, is the intersection of math and science. But what a lot of people are missing is the art form, the art of decision making that changes day to day. You really have to be able to adapt. And I think that's the superpower word of the day, is the adaptability of our strategies, to be able to take the current information that we have and use that to make more informed decisions moving forward. And the more information we have, the better decisions we can make. So with diabetes, if you can use just this simple framework, if, then, unless. If blood sugars are doing this, then do that, unless this, right? So for me, if blood sugars are at 146, then typically I would want to bring those back down. Unless you're about to do an Ironman 70.3. Okay, yeah, forget those rules. Different set of rules, right? And actually, for a fun fact for you guys on YouTube with me, this hat is the hat that I had custom made for this race. So I wore this for the entire run segment, and I actually got a few questions. It says Renegade Warrior Think Differently, and on the back, I'll see if I can show you this to you, it says, if you can see it, Feed the Warrior. And I'll have to do a separate episode on that one. That is and was and remains my mantra for the race. So I'll have to do a separate piece on that. But I hope you guys found this one helpful. Big takeaways from this. You got to have multiple plans. The more prepared you are with contingency plans, the better results you can expect and the more peace of mind you have going into it. I cannot tell you how wonderfully relaxing it was to enter into this race and go, okay, blood sugars, they're not going to be an issue, right? I mean, there was a slight almost hiccup in my blood sugar plan. So going into the race, I was cruising at 150, 158, I think was the final number, as I was getting my wetsuit on, and I glanced down right before I zipped up, because I do bring my insulin pump with me so I can see numbers until I enter the water, which allows me to get kind of a last minute check, right? And I watched it go from 158 to 140 to 132, and I was like, no, I'm about to go in and swim 1.2 miles and not know what my blood sugar is doing, and they're crashing right now. What the heck is happening? So that's when I took a couple bites of the RX bar and disconnected my pump for the swim, because I do disconnect it while I swim, and got lucky, actually. So this race that I did was they call it the season opener for the Pro Series. So I got to race alongside world-class professional athletes. I think there were 120 or 140 professional athletes competing on the same course as me, which was really cool, but also really humbling, because they finished less than half of the time that it took me to go through. It was insane how fast they were. That being said, the entire start of the race was delayed because they had to make sure all the pros got everything set and were official and, you know, make sure that all worked out. And because of the delay, that gave my RX bar some time to digest and my pump being disconnected some time to affect my blood sugars. And I watched it stabilize at 140 and then again 146 right before I entered the water. So I got that big sigh of relief. I was like, okay, we're not going to die. It's going to be okay. And I'll do a whole race recap because there was a moment halfway through the swim where I started spiraling, and it wasn't because of blood sugars. I'll have to share that later. That was a lot. Anyways, use the framework that you learned today. If, then, unless, my clients love using that one. Make sure you've got contingency plans for those big moments in life. You don't need them day to day. You don't need to think about this in that level of precision day to day. But when you've got family dinner, when you're traveling, if you do any kind of sports, right, game day, you want to make sure you have the ability to pivot and adapt and have these decision frameworks built out ahead of time, because the last thing you want to encounter is a blood sugar you don't know how to fix, right? So having these plans allows you to have peace of mind, but also to maintain control, as I have as well. As you can see, I'll drop this one and we'll end for today. I've maintained 90% or greater time and range for, I think, now or past 5 years straight. And obviously, as you could tell, this includes half Ironman races. This also includes being a parent, a business owner, training for triathlons, eating all my favorite foods, traveling the world. Over 90% time and range consistently. And we use what are called blood sugar formulas. So I'll drop something in the description, a link for you, if you want to check out more about what I use for blood sugar formulas. But ultimately, I want you to know what's possible. I want you to see that you don't have to settle for less just because you live with type 1 diabetes. It doesn't have to be the cards that you were dealt. You can shuffle, you can draw new cards, you can adapt your strategies with the cards that you have in order to play your best game in life. So I hope that serves to inspire you in some capacity. It certainly is part of my mission here, is to show you that life can be so much more, and all that you need in most cases is the right strategy, the right blood sugar formula. So thanks for hanging out with this one. I appreciate you guys and all the massive support you've given me across all the social media platforms, all the emails that I got over the weekend for my race day. You guys are fantastic. Nearly brought me to tears seeing all the support, the stories, the excitement, and the inspiration that has just circled this event and likely some events in the future. We'll talk more about that later though. So thanks for hanging out. Be sure to subscribe if you have not yet. Share these videos, by the way. We don't put any paid ads or sponsors behind this kind of stuff. It only gets shared by good people like you who want to spread the information and the hope to others who live with type 1, somebody else who might benefit with this type of info. So please do share, like it, add your comments below. I love reading those. So enjoy the rest of your day. Use these frameworks, if, then, unless. I'll see you guys next week. Have a great rest of your day and keep up the fight.